that's one of the things about religion that we have to remember when we're talking about that makes it such a hot topic issue is because we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody, we're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge, so ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, Cosmic Mind. Today is December 17th, 2021. I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Welcome to the 53rd Cubbyhole Podcast, where important topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for this show is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyWhole.com. You can listen to this podcast on Spotify, Apple, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Minds.com, Amazon Music, Odyssey, YouTube, and much more. Okay, hope everyone's brains are rested, and I hope everyone's ready for more symbolic breakdowns of the inner self, the inner journey. We're going to start off with the very monumental quote from the Oracle at Delphi. So if you're listening to this show, I'd like you to go to the Cubbyhole website under the podcast section and go all the way down to the show number 53, if you haven't done so already. And I'd like you to follow along. And we're going to start off with this first slide from the Oracle of Delphi, which is so important to understand what this quote is saying. So it starts off by saying, "Heed these words, you who wish to probe the depths of nature. If you do not find within yourself that which you seek, neither will you find it outside. If you ignore the wonders of your own house, how do you expect to find other wonders?" And the own house meaning the inner self, okay? "So in you is hidden the treasure of treasures. Know thyself, and you will know the universe and the gods." So we're a reflection of the universe, right? So as we deeply know ourselves and demystify our inner self, the mysteries of the inner self, then we are able to also demystify the universe. Okay. And these occult sciences that are shared in these cubbyhole episodes, they're keys. They're keys to understanding the universe. The universe. Okay. So as we understand the universe, the inward self, we're able to understand the outer world, okay? And in that quote where it says, "Know thyself and you will know the universe and the gods," that's when it says gods, that's talking about the inner parts of the self, because we have the inner gods that are reflecting outwardly, and outward gods are reflecting inward. So as we understand the sciences of the gods, so will we understand the science of the outward gods. So today we're going to go a little further in the Fellowcraft degree, the second degree, and I'm going to put a finer point on some things that I said in show number 51, and I'm going to add a lot more to what I've already covered in that episode. So, like I said, there's going to be slides, and I really strongly recommend following along with the slides. Otherwise, why even listen, you know? Because the slides are really what make the connections, at least in a more well-rounded way. Because if we don't understand these symbols, if we don't understand these tracing boards, if we're not looking at them while we're studying them, then, I mean, it's just, like I said, it's a waste of time. Now, before I get into the material for today, I just wanted to remind everyone, if you missed it last week or on the last show, I had Douglas Martin come back on the show, and it was a pretty great show. And that was show number 52, and we covered the tracing boards, the ancient Egyptian mythos, socialism, esoteric Freemasonry, and there was a lot of other stuff that we covered, but he did a really great job explaining ancient Freemasonry all the way up into the modern world. So if you haven't got a chance to listen to that, definitely make sure and go back and listen. It was a very, very awesome show. Now I'm going to go ahead and just jump right into the material for today's show. So I hope you're following along with the slides. And I'm on the second degree with the two golden brass pillars and the two initiates on the spiral staircase. And these two pillars that we're looking at here are Jachin and Boaz. And on the last show, I realized I said that Jachin was on the left, and I want to correct that. I meant to say it's on the right. So the pillar of Jachin is on the right, the pillar with the netted celestial orb resting on the top of the pillar, the chapiter at the top of the right pillar. And then the pillar of Boaz is the one with the earth or terrestrial netted orb on the chapiter to the left. Okay, so I apologize if anyone was confused by that. It can be a little disorienting. So this degree, this tracing board, is all about the inner self. Okay, it's the symbolic internal science of self. So it's important that we understand that this board, this tracing board, is also reflective like a mirror. Okay, now what I've learned about this tracing board in particular is the directions are actually the same as the Master Mason degree. Okay, the top is the west, right? The right is the north. So the right side is the north. And then south, the south side is left. And the bottom is east. So if you take this board and you turn it upside down and put it underneath the Entered Apprentice tracing board, it's basically a reflection of that degree. Okay, so you could look at the Entered Apprentice degree as the mind, and then you can look at the Fellowcraft degree as the heart. So in, you know, if you made it into relation of the actual human body, you could put the Entered Apprentice on the head and then put the Fellowcraft upside down on the heart. And that might help you make sense of what this is really saying, okay? And I know it's kind of disorienting, but as we learn the direction and follow the instruction, then we begin to really be able to put it all together, okay? And it takes a lot of knowledge. and a lot of attention. It takes the power of orienting the imagination where it needs to go. And it took me a long time. It took me a while to really realize the direction of this second degree properly. And I'm still seeing more as I ruminate on it. And, you know, I've been looking at the three tracing boards, the three degrees. I've been really meditating on these degrees for a long time. And I'm telling you, it just blows my mind how much information is stored in these images, you know? And there's so much that you can pull from each one, because each one holds symbols that it's just like what I was talking about with the 7 and the G in show number 51. I mean, I could have just kept going on and on and on. And I'm really leaving that up to you, because as you start to pull from these symbols and really do your own homework on these symbols, you'll find so much more than what I've covered. And you'll probably find so much more that I am not aware of, because there's just that much. But then as you see the patterns, as you see the similarities, as you see the parallels, that's when you really know that you're on the right path. And that is very important to understand. And that's also symbolic of the second degree, because this is all about understanding the spiral staircase. Because we don't, you know, as we make connections and we start to really see the big picture of things, it's an unfoldment, and we'll know that we're on the right path because we'll see the patterns. We'll see what is truly speaking to us, especially if we're open to listening to the universe. And that's something I'm going to get into a little later. Now, to get back to the pillars of Joaquin and Boaz, we have to remember that the pillar of Joaquin holds the celestial orb, which is the symbol for the universal law or natural law. And the pillar of Boaz holds the terrestrial orb, which symbolizes free will, the ability to choose right behavior over wrong behavior. And as the student advances in this area into King Solomon's porch, okay, with the knowledge of objective morality, then the legendary winding staircase emerges. It erects, okay? And the numbers of this winding staircase are 3, 5, and 7, the odd and perfect numbers. Now remember, I said it's important to understand both the winding staircase and the spiral staircase. They're the same thing, but both words need to be understood to properly understand this part. So as the student is ready and beginning this journey up the winding or spiral staircase, faith and will is required here. It's required to begin and take on this journey of the self, okay? So faith in the self is about, you know, it's to keep moving forward, even though we can't know what's around that bend. We can't know what will happen in our lives next, right? But if we're spiritually prepared and we have the drive, the will to keep moving forward in our journey, you know, to keep learning and living honestly, then here, this is where there'll be the reward of truth waiting for us. The Masonic tradition states that the seeker who makes it this far, who's labored in the depths of inner knowledge to want to know the truth, who's doing the great work and wants to step into the presence of the Creator, then this means that the student will be met and paid with spiritual wages. Wages for what it took to arrive to this point. And wages means truth. Truth is the payment for arriving to this point. Okay? So the first three steps are associated with the plumb rule, the level, and the square, or the entered apprentice, the fellowcraft, and the master mason degrees. Also, thought, emotion, and action. And all three aligned and harmonizing with natural law. The five steps that follow these three degrees are the five senses, which the student must master to be able to see past. Okay, so the five senses being hearing, seeing, feeling, smelling, and tasting. And then being able to see beyond the five senses, be able to see beyond those five steps, to be able to pass on to the seven. And five is associated with this degree, okay? This fellowcraft degree. This is the midpoint. And the next seven steps are made of the liberal arts. Okay, they are the first three are the trivium, and the next four are the quadrivium. And the trivium being the threefold path, and quadrivium being the fourfold path, both being truth discovery methods. Okay, and these numbers, three and four, relate to triangle and square. So triangle on top of the square being a house. And it's a house of seven points. And the number seven is a huge, like I said earlier, it's a huge unfoldment in Masonry. It's a symbol of symbols. And since the seven is the highest of the steps, it represents the most high, symbolically. It's the highest part of the spiral staircase, meaning most high. And this is about the spiritual symbol, the spire ritual symbol. And the corresponding symbolic place of the most high is the little bear constellation. It's where all things seven are stored safely. So safe from man's, you know, reckless, ignorant behavior, right? So the little bear holds all things seven. And it's something I'm sure most of the listening audience who has listened to all these podcasts has already heard many times. And I assure you, you will hear many more times because it's that important. And that's because it's a symbolic capsule of sacred spiritual knowledge. It's the top of the celestial spiral Christmas tree. Okay? So the seven represents the seven Vedic chakras and the seven points to the gavel with three sticks crossed. And then there's the seven candlesticks of the menorah. There's the seven Hermetic principles. The Elohim, which is five planets, and the sun and the moon. This is the seven wanderers total, okay? And then there's three primary colors and four secondary colors as a result of light shining through a glass prism, making seven total colors that are emanating from one pure light. And then there's seven major musical notes. And then there's seven crystal systems. And really the list goes on and on, especially in biblical texts. So the student that reaches the seven, this is where manhood is attained through an extreme and beautiful humility of self, realizing the infinite cosmic scale of the universe and realizing just how small and microcosmic we each are in relation to this insanely spectacular, grand, intelligent design, right? So realizing the seven, realizing this amazing symbol of the number seven and all that it holds, the student finds within themselves a connection beyond what any man or any woman could ever grant. This is where we learn the glory of the capital letter, the capital symbol letter G, which is the ineffable name, the unspoken name. Now, I covered much of the meaning of G in show 51, but I'd like to expand on it a little further in this episode, okay? So remember, I said the capital letter G is a combination of C and 7, right? So it can also be C square. So to be able to see the square, all right? Now remember, the square represents moral law. It's where the mason acts and builds morally, right? Well, to build is to build up, right? And the spiral staircase begins from the floor upwards, okay? So to build from the floor up is to build upright and level and morally, okay? Now, what I want you, the listener, to do is look at the capital letter G. And you'll see that it also is a symbol for a cycle. And I made a slide for this. So look for the slide that says cycles, okay? And this G, this capital letter G, it's like a circular line with a directional pointer on the end, right? And that's what life is full of, right? That's what life is. Life is a cycle of cycles. Microcosmic and macrocosmic cycles. So you have birth, growth, decay, spring, summer, fall, and so on. So when we imagine this, then we can also see that it's a three-dimensional spiral, like the Christmas tree, right? Now, the law of cycles is a geometric mandala that conceals the eternal spirals of creation. And this is about understanding the tree of life. And that's something we're going to cover in future shows, for sure. I mean, there's so much in this symbol, G, this capital letter G. And it's geometry. Remember, I said that's one of the main things that the G represents is geometry. And that's what Freemasonry truly is at its foundation. And spiritually, geometry is the study of the harmony of the universe. So that means that the seeker for truth is a geometer. So anyone listening to this show is a geometer, a spiritual geometer. And a geometer is a mason, and a mason is a geometer. Geometry is how the student comes to understand the creator. Now remember, geometry is the fifth science of the seven liberal arts. It teaches man to compare and measure out the terrestrial with the celestial. It's comprised of a moral and divine nature, and it's filled with the most useful, beneficial knowledge, which proves to me to be the most awesome and sacred aspects of nature that man could ever discover. So, in Masonic terms, the operative art of geometry is how we measure the physical universe, like the distance of planets and other celestial bodies, and measure how big and small they are in relation. And the speculative art of geometry is how we measure the spiritual universe, such as the use of the tracing boards or the zodiac. So we can, you know, be able to measure and map out consciousness. And it gives the student the ability to look in the inner part of the world. That's what really has to be understood, the inner part of the self, to orient the imagination with knowledge to be able to expand consciousness and build further, to expand and build further past the logical thresholds and limitations. Now, this leads me to what I call inherent spiritual tools. And there are many of these tools, but I'm not going to cover most of them on this show. But we've covered some of them on other shows in the past, so to a degree. Now, what do I mean by inherent spiritual tools? Well, first, the word inherent means built in. It means fixed or permanent. It's embedded in the fabric of creation for eternity. Okay? It's eternal. And spiritual means the growth and unfoldment of the human soul. Okay? It's about finding out the dogmas of life and transcending past them. Finding where we're wrong in life, because this is where true growth takes place. So we can transcend. So we can transcend and go find more dogma. So we can grow and evolve. And the word tools just means the instruments or implements. And some of the other examples of these inherent spiritual tools are the Hermetic principles, retrospect, and pattern recognition. And these are discoverable tools that we can use to search with, you know, especially inwardly, to be able to see with, to be able to decode with. That's what these discoverable tools, inherent spiritual tools, are here to do once we discover them. Because it's to help us understand what we can and cannot see or address with our common dialect fully. Okay? We use spiritual tools to build a strong foundation within, which is what esoteric Freemasonry is all about. And because these tools are inherent, they can't be and they can never be granted by man. Man cannot grant something to someone that is inherently theirs to begin with. Okay? These tools are discovered through knowledge. They're discovered through understanding of that knowledge, and they're discovered through experience and practices. Because as we practice with them, we gain the experience and we really begin to have gnosis of these inherent spiritual tools. And the individual wielder of these tools is the only authority of how and when they are used. But that's not to say that there's not a proper and logical use for them, because there definitely is. These tools are 100% understood by the science, the knowledge and the workings of the imagination as their driver. And this is about being able to expand the imagination and consciousness, which is what I call higher imagination, which is the pursuit of gnosis. It's about the pursuit of empirical knowledge pertaining to the spiritual mysteries. Okay? The inherent spiritual tool that I'm going to cover now is green language. So let's look at the green language slides, okay? Now, I know we've kind of covered this in the past, but I'm going to put a finer point on it here. And also, we have to keep in mind that the Fellowcraft degree is all about green language because G is in the middle, and G stands for green. Green is a middle frequency color of the visible spectrum. And this second degree is in the middle. It's the 2 between the 1 and the 3. It's the heart. It's the midpoint. And symbolically, at this midpoint of the student's journey, there comes a balance or sturdiness of the bridging between the brain hemispheres where true intelligence begins to reveal to us a sovereign approach to how we look into things, but also a moral and holistic one as well. This is why we have to be able to understand and demonstrate our understanding of natural law or moral law at this point in this degree. This way, we're ready to receive the universal messages that are speaking to us, because the universe is always speaking. So it's here where we fine-tune ourselves, where we refine our souls, so we can see and hear and taste and feel and smell things beyond the five senses and the physical reality. And green language is part of understanding what this means, because each sense corresponds to the spiritual nature of our being. So spiritually, we see the unseen, such as recognizing the laws that bind us by understanding the effects and causes. Plus, seeing is also intuiting, right? It's about imagination. And we hear the coded patterns in nature. It's about paying attention closely to what truly matters. You know, paying attention to the universe, being able to hear the universe. And we taste the pure nature versus the processed synthetic world. You know, we become health conscious of information that goes into us, whether that be food or knowledge, information. That's what it is. And we feel more when we spiritually awaken, as we become more sensitized and we're able to connect more with nature, right? And we become more sensitized to the inversions of reality. And we can smell as a sense, to be able to sense BS and what we're taught in low conscious public schooling. Because as we gain more gnosis, we gain more of a stronger sense for what is correct and what the correct direction is on our journey towards truth. So we have to be able to see, hear, taste, feel, and smell the esoteric, okay? So that is part of going beyond the five senses of the physical reality. So we have to master our senses both physically and spiritually. So green language is a tool that is key to using while we search for truth. And it is highly, highly, highly dismissed and totally overlooked by so many people. But this language is a language of calibration. And this tool, like many tools, can be improperly used. And of course, that can and has turned many people, especially many skeptics, away from further investigation of this tool. So we have to understand that this language is a phonetic principle. It's like a wordplay or a pun language, but is actually important to our self-rulership, to our sovereignty. It's an intelligent alignment to balance ourselves within and outwardly, especially for those who are ready to hear and see, because when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And green language is one of man's oldest spiritual technologies. And it's part of understanding the alchemical wedding. So green language is a balanced frequency that allows the student to see and hear phonetically, acronymically, allegorically, symbolically, anagrammatically, etymologically, and of course, more importantly, it allows one to see and hear morally. So morality is at the heart of green language. It's a universal tongue where all language potentially meets in the middle for a higher understanding and communication. So it's a correspondence. And that's the communication. The correspondence, when we really start to master this principle, we will understand that it is the communication from the microcosm to the macrocosm, and vice versa. Okay? So when we think about the heart and the word heart, heart is something we listen to, right? It beats. It has rhythm. It's like music. We listen and flow and vibrate to this beat every second that we're alive, right? And we listen with our ear, right? I mean, we literally, generally speaking, we listen with our ear, right? Well, we can also listen with our heart, right? Now, what word is right in the middle of the word heart? It's ear, right? Because spiritually, we listen from the middle. We listen with balance. And when we're out of balance and not listening with the heart, then we're not truly listening. So that's really, really important to understand, because as we balance ourselves in the mind, and we know that heart and mind are connected, then we're listening with the ear of the heart, because we're listening from a place of balance. So that's what it really means to listen from the heart or with the heart. So we use our physical sense of hearing, and we use our spiritual sense of hearing or listening. And this is a major part of understanding our emotion, right? And our emotion is connected with the heart. So as we listen with our heart and listen to our heart, then we are able to control our emotions. A lot easier anyway, right? We are able to put our emotions in check. It's about the plumb rule. We have to be able to plumb rule our emotions, to not let our emotions get the best of us. That's how we grow. I tell people all the time that I truly want to know where I'm wrong about things. I want to know where I'm wrong on this journey, especially in regards to what I speak, because I don't want to be wrong, but I want to know where I'm wrong because I want to grow. And when I want people to tell me when I'm wrong, of course, that's only if they know and are being honest in how they explain how and why I'm wrong. Okay? I'm not open to people just telling me I'm wrong about something and can't explain why I'm wrong, because there's not going to be any growth that takes place there. Okay? There's not going to be any real retrospect. There's not going to be any real, no real growth. But I'm always open. And, you know, it's interesting that the three hardest words for people to say is I was wrong. And I know so many people, if not, I would say most people I know cannot say I was wrong about anything. Their pride and ego will not allow them to say those three words. When I know for a fact that they are wrong about something, and I can explain and demonstrate how and why they are wrong, not because I want to be right, but just because if they are saying something that I know to be untrue, especially something in regards to of importance in this world, then I'm going to call it out. And it takes great rulership over the ego and emotions to behave this way, to be able to say I was wrong. And as much as it hurts to know when I'm wrong about something, I recognize that it will only help me grow as an individual. And that's really true in all of us. If we give it that chance, if we find a way to override our pride and ego of just trying to be right. That's why if we are part of a groupthink mentality where the majority agree on something that is actually wrong, and we're part of that group, we're not individually ever going to grow if we're always just going with what the group says is right or what they say is wrong, and it's the opposite. So we have to understand this is about self-rulership. This is about being the authority of the self and thinking critically for the self and being honest, especially with the self, because without honesty, we're never going to grow. Honesty hurts, but it's where growth takes place. It's what makes us a better person. And I want to further what I'm saying here. I want to say something very critical that really has just about everything to do with this second degree, which is being able to take extreme criticism and not have an emotional egoic response as a result of what is being said or shown in, right in front of us. Okay? Now, what I want you to do here is pay attention to your inner response to what I'm about to say. So really, really pay attention to how you respond in this next part, okay? So an example would be like someone telling you that anyone who does not understand and talk about morality while claiming to be an anarchist is a full-on retard. Now, To many of you who are listening, that may sound very harsh. And I'm sure to a few of you, that may sound pretty spot on. But the point is, being able to listen to the underlying message, aside from the harshness of how it was said, how I said it, to be able to do that without having an emotional response, whether you believe that statement to be true or not, because it's about realizing that if we put all of our attention on the who said what or how they said it, then we miss the message. We miss the point. And this could be really bad if the message is powerful and beneficial. Now, I'm not saying that it's necessarily a good idea to name call or speak harshly or with vulgarity when delivering a meaningful or truthful message, but we have to recognize the message first before its delivery, right? That's vital to understand. And I always say that anybody who is speaking reality and sounds harsh or condescending, they're not wasting their time just to sound mean and condescending, okay? I mean, I get that there's, you know, some narcissistic psychopaths out there saying some real things, but even then, pay attention to their intent and what is being said. That's what's important. We have to pay attention to, yes, we do have to pay attention to who is saying what and how they are saying it. Sure, that is important. But what's the most important is the message. That's why there's the saying, don't kill the messenger. So if you can master not killing the messenger, then you're mastering your emotion. You're mastering your emotional response, because it's about understanding that the message is the most important thing that you could receive. That anyone could really take in and try to understand what is being said rather than who and how. So we have to rule our emotions to be able to receive the messages. That's what this degree is all about. It's about mastering our emotions. And this is part of understanding the art of green language. And many people have a conditioned emotional response who are not ready to hear the messages revealed by those who speak of what's found using this spiritual tool. And I remember back in the day when I was looking into the world of the occult and being very resistant to green language when I first heard it. When I first heard it being used. And I would want to, you know, just quit listening to the person who was trying to convey the message and just completely throw it out. And luckily, I quickly overpowered my emotional inner response to this art, to this language. And I was able to really push myself to look deeper into it before throwing it all out. And even then, I would look so far into so many words that I thought were part of understanding green language. And then I thought maybe I'm just looking too deep into these words and into other things. And even then, even when I was feeling that I was overlooking things, I realized I was having an emotional, social, mind control response within myself to just trying to run away from truth, which is what most people do. But it was because I didn't realize the importance of knowledge and the understanding of morality at the time. So the knowledge of natural law and morality is so important when listening for green language. So if you don't have the knowledge of natural law or the knowledge of morality, then it is almost, I would say it's impossible to really discover green language. Because green language really is a moral principle. It's a balanced principle. And this art of light, green language, because that's what it is. It's the art of light. It's very versatile. It's not just a phonetic correlation. It's very layered. And it's the tool used to help the student realize the middle path, which is where truth is found. And the more that the student uses this tool, then the more the student will reveal so much that just can't be found in books. It's not something that can be found in the common vernacular. Okay? Now remember, the path towards truth isn't really a straight path. It's an unfoldment. Now look at the word unfoldment. It means the gradual development or revelation of something, right? And to unfold something is to open it, right? And the compound word ment is Latin for mind. So it means an unfoldment of mind or an opening mind. So we think about what the definition of the word tells us, right? And then we listen to the phonetic message. Then we look at its etymology. And then we're able to come to an intelligent conclusion of what the word is really saying. So it's about getting an eclectic idea or view of each word, especially a word whose definition has something to do with morality. And then, of course, unfoldment is part of understanding morality because it's about openness and growth and evolution. And that's part of being moral, because as we become moral, we are putting into the universe growth. We are harmonizing. Growth takes place when we harmonize with nature, not when we go against nature. That's where we stagnate. We stagnate when we go against nature, when we are causing disharmony, right? So when it comes to understanding green language, it's important to note that pattern recognition is part of understanding the process of language acquisition, which is about gaining the ability to understand how certain words and letters can speak beyond the literacy of what's taught about that word, okay? It goes beyond the appeal to authority. And this is where the higher imagination comes in, because we have to be able to see beyond. And obviously, we have to have knowledge to be able to see beyond, to be able to stand on the logic of the knowledge to see beyond, because it's also about intuiting. And green language can help us get to those parts that go beyond the words, beyond the logic of the words. And I truly believe it's healthy to exercise this tool freely, okay? I believe that it is okay to look at every word and entertain the idea that maybe it is saying something very important that can help us on our paths, okay? But obviously, you don't want to get too caught up in trying to make every word seem like it has a deeper meaning, or you'll miss the point of its purpose. You'll miss the purpose of green language. Because remember, it comes when we are balanced within. So the more balanced we are within, the more this language speaks to us. Okay? Obviously, we got to be looking for it as well, but it speaks to us when we're ready. So the main thing to keep in mind is this tool isn't a tool to play with when we're searching for truth. It's a spiritual tool for the serious student who is ready to receive clarity of that which isn't available in the common vernacular, okay? It's about being able to be open to the universe at all times. And like I said, it's about balance. It's about listening with a balanced heart and mind. And like I said, I know I've spoken about this language many times, and I've used green language a lot in past shows and presentations, but this degree is where this language truly needs to be understood, and this is where we refine it. This is where we really start to deeply understand it and use it and practice with it, okay? Now, let's look at the slide of the tracing board that says from darkness to light at the bottom. The one with lots of green color and trails and the eye up at the top in the middle, okay? This is one of my favorite tracing boards because it's one image that holds a ton of esoteric knowledge. It holds all 3 degrees and then some. And something that I find very important to point out about the spiral staircase in the second degree is it's also analogous to the rising of the Kundalini. And if you're not familiar with the Kundalini, it is a form of sacred feminine energy located in the base of the spine, of the human spine, in the root chakra that causes an awakening as it rises up through the spine to the brain, which happens in a being supposedly through a method of meditation, you know, deep meditation, I would say. And, you know, of course, if that has actually truly worked for anyone, then more power to them and good for them. But mostly it's through esoteric knowledge of self, because it's about awakening the sacred care within to have the divine drive to truly awaken. Okay? Knowledge unlocks the dormant parts of the brain. That's what really has to be understood. And that's part of truly, truly awakening. And no one just magically wakes up, or they're not just, you know, awakened overnight. It's a process. It takes hard, tenacious work to even begin to truly awaken. It takes willpower. And in my experience, through the awakenings that I have had, have only really awakened me to the fact that once I awaken, I realize how asleep I still am to a lot of other things. But I think one of the greatest awakenings any human being could ever have is the awakening of recognizing that we are slaves and that we need to do something about it, and then actually do something about it. That's really, truly where a very powerful awakening takes place, is when we recognize that. And just like I said in show 51, recognizing the suffering in others is really one of the important parts of an awakening. Because as we recognize suffering in others, we recognize that all are suffering. So, back to this tracing board, you know, my point is that this from darkness to light tracing board is the path of the Kundalini. So, at the bottom, where the Kundalini energy begins, is analogous to darkness and beginning. And then it travels as the student ascends towards light or enlightenment, right? And there's that word meant again. So enlighten the mind. So towards east is where we go for this enlightenment symbolically, to higher levels of, this is about the awakening. So as the Kundalini rises, this is about our degrees of awakening. And the trails intertwined that you see in the middle of this image, this is the dance of the sacred masculine and the sacred feminine energies in a marriage towards Sahasrara, or what we see as the all-seeing eye, okay? It forms what's known as the caduceus, you know, the two snakes intertwined going up this pole or this staff with two wings at the top, okay? And below this all-seeing eye is the mansion that the student discovers as the Kundalini energy rises to the crown chakra. And since we're on the subject of the mansion and green language, I might as well share a little allegory here. I actually kind of planned it, but I wasn't sure. But it's an allegory. It's more of a analogous correlation, okay? Now, what I want you to do is imagine having a mansion. And could you know, just imagine having a mansion with 160 rooms and only using a closet. Now, I want you to hold that question, that idea in your mind, okay? A mansion is an enormous house, right? With many, 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 many rooms. And in order to have or own a mansion, we must be rich, right? And we must be organized, and we must really have a lot of important things to keep in each room, right? Now, a mansion is typically the lighter shade of white, and a mansion is traditionally very well built, and many mansions typically have pillars in the front, right? And this is very symbolic of the mind. And one of the greatest things about the mansion is realizing that the mansion in the spiritual sense is man's eye on. Now think about that. That's the green language of the word. It's a very symbolic and metaphorical and beautiful discovery to know that we all have the ability to build or discover and live in and take care of our own mansion within. So every door is like a new pathway opened in the mind. And the more that we learn and the more knowledge that we take in, the more rich we become. And it's as if, you know, our mind has all these doors waiting to be opened, and there's something, you know, really magical waiting to be discovered in each room. And one of the saddest things that I've ever come to realize is realizing that we have such a beautiful mansion within. It's already there. It's waiting to be found, with each treasure waiting to be discovered, and waiting to have all these doors opened and looked through and searched and used for good. You know, and some people use it for bad too, but most people have hundreds and thousands of these doors, probably more than that, because it's really infinite. That's what the mind is. And they've only peeked into the closet. Most people have only Ben to their closet of their mansion. You know, the closet right at the front door. Just sitting there comfy in some stinky shoes under some coats, never wanting to know the rest of what's going on, what's taking place in their own mansion. Never looking through any other door. Never going up the stairs, never going down the stairs. Never looking out the windows. Never looking at, you know, in the reflections of all the mirrors. Never walking down the hallways. Just never getting any other angle of their own mansion. And this is, I would say, mostly because nobody wants responsibility. I mean, just imagine living your whole life in a closet of a mansion. Life is too short, and the mind is way too infinite and beautiful to only open a door or two, or three, or even 10, really. We have to leave no door left unopened, just as we can't leave any stone left unturned. We're made of information waiting to be unlocked with the right knowledge. The more that we understand our mansion, the more we understand truth. What we really have to understand is the mansion, first and foremost, is about being rich in the mind. So all ideas and things that man has built have first started in the mind. So the idea of a mansion first had to start in the mind. So the riches of the mansion within manifest the mansion outwardly. So when we die in the physical realm with a mansion, if we have a mansion, and we have no riches within, then we die with no riches, right? So if we're really rich in the physical world, in the material world, we don't get to die with that, with those riches. But if we build or discover the inner mansion within, we definitely get to die with riches. We get to move on with riches because the mind, the spirit, does not die with the physical, with the material. That's not how it works. So as the Kundalini rises and ignites our eye with the riches of knowledge, then we're able to see out all of our windows, or most of our windows. We're able to go into each room and find the treasures that are hidden there. And the Kundalini energy is the spiral staircase. It's the spiral ritual. It's the journey of the soul to source, to the Most High. It's the dance of sparks in the middle. It truly is the awakening. And as we further our advancement with the use of the green language tool, going back to the second degree tracing board, I'd like to dive into something very sacred. And we're going down the hall into the middle chamber. The middle chamber of King Solomon's temple. And this is where the student arrives to the symbolic summit within. It's about the zenith of the Kundalini. It's where the treasures of knowledge are waiting to be discovered. This is where the spirit and body come together at the mental plane of being. That's what the middle chamber is. It's the mind. And mind is associated with the heart, especially how the ancients expressed it. And more importantly, it's about the middle. The mind is between the middle of spirit and physical, and the heart is in the middle of the body, which is the green Anahata chakra, okay? So it's all within the midpoint. It's all in the middle. It's the core, okay? Now, this middle chamber part is at the core of importance because, and I'm going to try to demonstrate this part as simple as possible, but it's about restoring or finding our care. And as you can tell, in this world, in today's age, most people do not care. They don't know true sacred care. They've lost it, or they just can't find it, or they really just won't look for it. That's really the truth right there. They just won't look for it. But I really believe that it's a combination of all of that with the dark forces at work who are systematically destroying it in our minds. And that's something that I definitely understand. And if we listen carefully to what I'm expressing and mirror it into our being, then it should help us really start to understand why this part is the most important. And I really truly believe this because if we don't have care, then none of this matters. So let's look at the slide with Ra and the sun disk. Now, using our symbolic mind and our ear for green language, as well as the knowledge of the ancient deities and the Egyptian stellar and solar mythos, especially the solar mythos, we have Horus, the solar deity, who rises from the horizon, the east, into midday, and also rises in midsummer, converting into the god Ra, right? And the ancient Egyptian solar god Ra represented the sun and the Most High, whose symbol was the solar disk, as well as the circle with the dot in the middle, okay? And this took place during the early phases of the solar mythos over 40,000 years ago. So symbolically, Ra represented fully raised or fully enlightened, which is what a human can only strive to do or strive for in a lifespan, right? So the aspects and the circle dot symbol of Ra is really, really important to pay attention to. Now, on the next slide with the word pyramid, when we look at this word pyramid, we know that when broken down etymologically, it comes from the Greek pyra, which means fire, and then mid, meaning in the middle, okay? So middle fire, or fire in the middle. And this corresponds to the heart. It corresponds to the Anahata heart chakra, the middle chakra, right? And it corresponds to the middle pillar. And this is the symbol of care. The fire in the middle is the symbol of care, and it needs to be restored. Care needs to be restored. So knowledge of what comes with the pyramids and all that is stored in these pyramids is about especially the great pyramids. That's what I'm talking about here. If I haven't said that already, I'm talking about the great pyramids of Egypt. So knowledge of what comes with the pyramids, and what's stored in them is about reigniting. It's about reilluminating the fire, the care within. Okay? And this really takes the higher imagination to truly see and make this connection. Especially because so much of this vital knowledge has been lost. It's been occulted on purpose. And there's lots of pieces missing, which are the mysteries. But we have some truly great authors, thankfully, who have at least gave us an enormous part of the puzzle pieces to this big, enormous puzzle. They've given us logical pieces to work with. And these authors that I'm talking about are Gerald Massey, Alvin Boyd Kuhn, Harold Bailey, Albert Churchward, Schwaller DeLubitsch, and there's quite a few others. But these people are definitely the authors that we should be looking into their work to really be able to understand what these pyramids are saying to us, because they are a correspondence to the inner self, to the mind. So it is a, and what did I say about correspondence earlier? I said it's a communication. It's a very deep, sacred form of communication, because as we discover this knowledge about our past and we discover ourselves inwardly, then we're able to understand the world that we're living in. We're able to understand these religions that we're part of in the modern era and where they came from. Because as we begin to understand what these religions that we're part of in the modern era, and we also look at the religions of the past, then we can start to see where the corruption began. And we can see how we've devolved, because we definitely have not evolved. Technology does not mean evolution, okay? Technology has nothing to do with human evolution at all. But as we go back into antiquity, we can see where these religions began. We can start to understand their origins. And there's some green language here that actually leads to some science and math regarding these great monuments, the great pyramids, the greatest temple ever built. So let's look at the slide with the pi symbol, okay? So you can also say pyramid is pi ra mid. And pi as in the Greek number, as in the mathematical constant or infinite, right? And what is pi? We know it's the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter, right? So this means the circumference of a circle is a little tiny bit more than 3 times as long as its diameter. So the base of the great pyramid is a square whose perimeter is equal to the circumference of a circle with a radius that's equal to the height of the great pyramid. So 2 times pi, or 3.14 times the radius, which is 481 feet, this equals the circumference, and the circumference is 3020.68. Now also keep in mind, the Egyptians measured in cubits, not inches like what we see here, okay? So now we're going to look at the slide that says pyramid, okay? Now, Ra is also the symbol of the arch, as is pi, okay? They both represent the arch. Pi is also referred to as Archimedes, constant. Okay, so what the great pyramids really are is a corresponding temple to the human temple of the soul. Like what I just said, it's the unfoldment of the human soul. That's what they are. They are giant symbols that correspond to ourselves. And the archway is the solar path of the sun, east to west. And this symbolically is about being balanced and fully raised and aligned in the heart and mind. It's about the restoration of true care because it brings us back to fertility rites with our ultimate responsibility as stewards of this planet. And when the fellow cares enough to begin to understand why the Great Pyramids were built, there will be great inspiration to restore the higher knowledge that was lost, that's been fragmented, that's been occulted, because it holds very powerful keys to human sovereignty, aka freedom. It's ultimately about furthering our understanding of natural law. And of course, there's way more to that, but I just wanted to make that point. And something that I find very important to point out with the corresponding symbolism of Jesus on the cross as a symbol and the viewpoint over the top of the pyramids as a two-dimensional image, which would be a square with two diagonal lines crossing each other with a midpoint, which would be the top, right? This is where they cross. This is where the diagonal lines cross at the top, especially in the three-dimensional pyramid, right? So let's look at the slide that says cross with the overhead view of the pyramids. Now, if you remember what I was talking about in show 51 with the circling of the square, where I said we can find the midpoint of a square by crossing two diagonal lines and then use that midpoint to erect the compass to circle the square, right? To put spirit above the physical. Well, these two diagonal lines create an X, right? And on the pyramid, these lines go outwardly, right? So the four lines that we see, the four corners of the pyramid, they go outward from the midpoint. So they're masculine angles because they're angular and they go outward. And some people listening might not know that the Great Pyramids actually have four extremely small concave lines between the outward masculine lines that create a cross as well. And these concave lines are feminine. So really the Great Pyramids have eight faces. They have eight sides. And this goes right in line with the idea of the Vitruvian Man. Okay? They have four masculine outward angles and four feminine inward concave angles. Now the base or earth is represented by the four corners of the base of the pyramid, right? This means physical. That's what the base represents. So we have to understand that these three great pyramids are a temple corresponding to us. So we have the four corners at the base, and these four corners are made by four noticeable masculine corners that meet in the middle, four lines that meet in the middle at the top, right? And there's four faint concave feminine lines that create a cross that meet in the middle as well, right? Now, in the Bible, it says that there are four gospels or four angels that told the story of Jesus' life. There was Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, as it says in the New Testament, or test a mind. There's that meant again, test a mind. And because that's what it's here to do. It does. It tests our mind. And these, I mean, it's there to help our mind, but that's what a test does. A test is about helping. It's about growing. And these four angels or angles make up the square. They are a tetramorph. They're a tetramorph of the body of Jesus. And a tetramorph, if you're not familiar, it's basically a symbolic arrangement of four different elements, or it's a combination of four elements in one unit. Okay? So they each emphasize an aspect of the archetypal Jesus' body and personality. They're the four angles. They give their angle, okay? They describe their angle of Jesus because it's about finding the midpoint, and the midpoint is right in the crux of the cross, because these angles, they're the right angles of the square or earth. They're the square that the student builds on morally from or on. Okay? Because it's the Masonic, you have to think about it as the Masonic square. And remember, Jesus represents the midpoint or the middle of the cross. And also remember, I said that the symbol, the capital letter G, is in the middle of the spirit and the physical, between the compass and square, and the Jesus, the capital letter G, the symbol G, apostrophe S, us. Okay? We are the Savior of ourselves. We are supposed to find our inner G, our inner Messiah, because you and I are the real me-sias. This is part of deeply understanding the generative principle. So most people are in search of or waiting for someone else to do their sovereign inner monarch work for them, right? They look for aliens. They look for the physical second coming of Jesus. They look for QAnon. They look for law enforcement. They look for military and politicians. They look for anyone else exterior to come and save them. But nobody has ever come to save anyone else from slavery other than their own selves, especially mentally and spiritually, because nobody can save you but you. And I know that what I'm saying is probably offending a lot of people. And so be it. We have to understand that slavery begins in the mind. And we have to save ourselves in the mind. And it will stay there. This slavery will stay there till each one of us raises ourselves up off the floor, out of darkness, towards the east, towards light. And the journey east is towards freedom, towards light. Okay? And as we free ourselves inwardly, our physical being will fall in line and begin to resist tyranny and slavery with all its might, naturally. Okay? That's how it works. That's the deeper part of understanding natural law right there. Now, one thing I really want to be clear on is there's a difference between wanting a savior and needing help. And I believe deep down we all want and need help. We can't do life alone. We need each other. But to depend on someone else for our own freedom and salvation, that's the illusion. That's the illusion that we have to break out of. Okay? No one is responsible for your inner work. No one else is responsible for anyone else's inner work. I'm not responsible for your inner work. You're not responsible for my inner work. We are individually responsible for the inner work that we do on ourselves. Okay? I'm not responsible for freeing your mind. You're not responsible for freeing my mind and my heart. Okay? I'm responsible for that. You're responsible for yours. Now, as we use the Masonic tools to erect ourselves upright and vertical in our emotion and level in our equal horizontal behavior and honest on our path, then we can see for ourselves that the midpoint, the heart, the care, this is the driver that raises us from the dark, lower, enslaved self. We save ourselves through hard, tedious degrees of agape, which is the highest level of love. Albert Mackey, someone who everyone listening to this show should go research this man's great work. He says the candidate incited by the love of virtue and the desire of knowledge, and withal eager for the reward of truth, which is set before him, begins at once the toilsome ascent. At each division, he pauses to gather instruction from the symbolism which these divisions present to his attention. Well, I think I'm going to go ahead and end it there. And I hope everyone listening gets to go home and be with their family and enjoy the holidays and just get away from all this crazy shit that we're being subjected to. It's important that we get to be in the physical presence, breathe the same air as everybody else, and do what's intended in nature, not be segregated. So I know I'm really excited to be with my family, and I'm excited to share some deep ideas and have some really awesome conversations. You know, that's something that me and my family, I'm very fortunate to be able to do that with my family. And I really hope that everybody else can do that. If they can't now, I hope they eventually get to, because that's what we really need to do, guys. We really need to get with our families, be honest with our families, and find ways to have these deeper, honest conversations. And, you know, just, it's really important. But, yeah, anyways, I hope you guys enjoy some delicious foods. I know that's something I'm really looking forward to. And I can't wait to see the family dogs. It's been way too long. I live so far away and I don't have any pets. And so whenever I get with them, I'm just so stoked. And it's just such a magical time. But if you're interested in more shows, presentations, or news, please go to cubbyhole.com, and if you have any questions regarding the topics for these shows, please email me at cubbyhole@mail.com. Also, any donations that are made are always appreciated here. And the funds that are donated, they go directly to the Cubbyhole website. And if that's something you would like to do, just hit the donation button at the top of the website. And it's pretty easy to navigate from that point. And thanks again to those who have donated so far. I really, really, really appreciate that. So, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening. And keep in mind to do no harm. Defend truth. Defend what's right. Because you know what's right. Because it doesn't cause harm to others. And keep transcending dogma. Keep finding the dogma in your life. Transcend past it. And keep growing. And I'll see you guys in 2022.